Highbridge Audio presents Hitler's Holy Relics, a true story of Nazi plunder and the race to recover the crown jewels of the Holy Roman Empire by Sidney D. Kirkpatrick. Read for you by Charles Stransky. Man thirsts more for glory than for virtue. Armor of an enemy, his broken helmet, the flag ripped from a conquered ship, were treasures valued beyond all human riches. It is to obtain these tokens of glory that generals, be they Roman, Greek, or barbarian, brave thousands of perils and endure 1,000 exertions. Decimus Junius Juvenalis, Roman poet of the 2nd century CE. Author's note. The true story that follows is based on military records, correspondence, diaries, interviews, archival materials, and the unpublished World War II oral memoirs of University of California, Berkeley, art history professor Walter Horn. Chapter 1. Blacksmith's Alley. February 23, 1945. Every morning, like clockwork, Allied bombers would darken the skies over Namur, Belgium. In this last winter of World War II, hundreds and sometimes 1,000 planes flying in vast air armadas known as bomber streams would thunder overhead for an hour or more at a time, leaving miles-long vapor trails that hung in the air long after the aircraft had vanished and the bombardiers had released their lethal cargo over targets in Germany and Eastern Europe. The arrival of the bomber streams terrified the captured German soldiers at the U.S. Army detention center in the snow-covered fields on the outskirts of Namur. The prisoners, huddled together and shivering in wire mesh holding pens, would peer anxiously skyward, dreading the horror about to be unleashed on their friends and families at home. Their American captors would also look up at the planes, but instead of fear, they felt overwhelming admiration for the bomber crews and their firepower. They were the silver hammer that was destroying the Nazi war machine and would soon enable the Allied army to annihilate Adolf Hitler in his homeland. That the day and night bombing missions targeted not only military objectives but also industrial sites, resulting in the destruction of entire cities, was the price that Germany had to pay for its continued resistance. First Lieutenant Walter Horn, one of 10 German-speaking U.S. Third Army interrogators stationed at Camp Namur, awaited the daily arrival of the bomber squadrons with mixed emotions. 36 years old, with a broad chest and shoulders, dark movie star looks, and an impatient wife, waiting at home in Point Richmond on the San Francisco Bay, Horn felt tremendous pride in America's ability to build, fuel, maintain, and launch thousands of planes loaded with tens of thousands of bombs, hurtling them hundreds of miles deep into enemy territory. Although he had yet to fire a weapon in combat during 2 years of service, and his mobile intelligence unit, commanded by General George S. Patton, always remained a comfortable 50 miles behind the front lines, Horn appreciated the daring and courage of the air crews and felt a special kinship with the thousands of others, artillerymen, infantry, medics, cooks, clerks, and quartermasters, who made up the largest, fastest-moving, and best-equipped army that had ever existed. But the sight of the bomber streams also filled Horn with anxiety. Like the prisoners he interrogated, he had been born, raised, and educated in Germany. He never knew whether one of the bombers would be dropping its payload within range of his family's home in Heidelberg, or if, as he looked into the holding pens at the forlorn faces of captured and wounded prisoners, he would one day see the face of his older brother, Rudolf. Lieutenant Horn's orders that winter were to help ascertain whether Hitler would unleash chemical or biological weapons when the Allied army crossed the Rhine River into the German heartland. It had been rumored that the Germans, in a last desperate attempt to break the vice of the approaching Allied forces, would resort to using such weapons, as they had in the trenches in France 27 years earlier. Patton's mobile intelligence unit had prepared a detailed questionnaire to ferret out the truth. Interrogators did not ask prisoners directly about weapons stockpiles. Rather, they elicited the information from 4 out of 150 seemingly random questions put to the prisoners. The answers would be used to determine if the soldiers had been taught how to use chemical or biological weapons in battle, and if, hidden behind enemy lines, shelters were in place to protect the civilian population. 1,500 rank-and-file soldiers, selected from Wehrmacht infantry captured in Belgium after the Battle of the Bulge, had been marched to Namur for this purpose. The interrogation facilities being inadequate, many of the interviews took place out of doors. Horn's office, just beyond the prisoner enclosures, consisted of 2 empty orange crates, a small desk borrowed from a nearby elementary school, and a stack of questionnaires and pencils.